Hey, good morning. I want to welcome you to Mount Olivet, those of you that are here, and those of you that are tuning in online as well, and later on listening in podcasts. So glad that you joined us. We are in a series this fall looking at one of the, maybe the greatest, most famous spiritual men in Scripture, David. And the King David, you know, the David that killed Goliath, that David. And it was said of David that he was a man after God's own heart. What does that even mean? And what made him a man after God's own heart? Well, part of this series is going to try to uncover what it means to be a person after God's own heart and what it was that David did or didn't do that made him a man after God's own heart. And the message today is going to go right in that direction. Now, I imagine that you have known someone, we've all known someone, who maybe they're a famous someone, maybe there's someone that was just famous to us because we looked up to them, we had them on a pedestal, and all of a sudden, years later, we find out that that someone kind of came crashing down, that their life kind of became unraveled. If you're a Christian and you've been a Christian for any length of time, you can probably list at least one or two or three or more people that you looked up to. Maybe pastors, authors, Christian comedians, I don't know, like your Sunday school teacher, whoever it was. But there's a Christian person in your life that you looked up to. In fact, you might have even desired to model and mold your life and maybe your ministry after that person. And then suddenly, years later, you find out that that person was stealing money from their ministry. They were, you know, abusing people on the side. They were really bad with their kids. Maybe they were having affairs or multiple affairs along the way. And you just, you know, it kind of left you shaken. Maybe for you, it was a school teacher or a coach or a business person. And you're a business person. And you looked up and you modeled your life after this person, and suddenly you find the bottom on their life, the foundation of life completely became undone. It became unraveled, and you were left a little shaken. And you wonder, what happened? What happened to them? You know, what led them to this? And I had no idea that all those years I was looking up to them, there was something else going on under the surface. You know, we typically, as humanity, we judge and we make our perceptions on people based on what we see. And we look from a distance and we hear a great communicator, we hear a pastor who can really preach, and we make an assumption that they must be really spiritual people. We see a coach who had some influence on our life, and we see the exterior and we make conclusions about who they are. But we also do this with writing people off, right? We see someone and they don't really have that many skills and they're not really all that attractive, and we just kind of write them off and we don't actually see the potential that's there, because what we make judgments on is almost strictly what we see. Well, in the story we're going to look at today, we're going to be challenged that maybe we need to have a new perspective. And the way that we look and that we make judgments on people, we need to look and make judgments in new ways. We need new categories. And we may also see that if we start to value and see what's important the way God sees what's important and what God values, that it might just keep us from being the next story of that someone who seemed like they had it all together, and yet the bottom fell out. So to do that, we're going to look at the contrast between two men. Well, a man and a boy. The man is King Saul. He is king of Israel, the first king of Israel. And we're going to see a perspective on how he was judged and what happened in his life in contrast to a young boy, a nobody at that time. No one really knew about him. His name was David. And to set up who King Saul was, the text tells us in 1 Samuel, it tells us this about King Saul, and he wasn't king yet. It says this about Saul. Saul was as handsome a young man as could be found anywhere in Israel. And on top of his great looks, he was a head taller than anyone else. Saul was drop dead good looking. I mean, he just had it all going on. And here's the thing about attractive people. Attractive people are attractive to people. Attractive people attract people. If you're a leader and you're attractive, you have a step ahead on every other leader because people want to follow someone who's attractive. And Saul had it going on. He was attractive, but more than that, he was tall. In that culture, height and power and physical strength was a big deal. And so he was a head taller than anyone else. He walked into the room and he had a presence about him. And everyone kind of just, you know, he had a commanding presence about him. He was attractive. People already wanted to follow him. And he was built with his stature in a strong, tall kind of way. But not only did he have this going for it, he backed it up with military heroics. And even before he was king, he brought together, he united a group of men of Israel and Judah, which was quite a feat because Israel and Judah were not always all that unified. He united an army of men from Israel and Judah, and he went and he saved the city of Jabesh, which was being attacked by the Ammonites. And the text tells us, it goes on, and it says this, it says, after Saul assumed rule, after he'd become king over Israel, he fought against their enemies on every side, Moab, the Ammonites, Edom, the king of Zobah, and the Philistines. And this is what happened. Wherever he turned, he inflicted punishment on them. And he fought valiantly and defeated the Amalekites, delivering Israel from the hands of those who had plundered them in the past. If there was a leader, Saul was a leader. In today's world, we would have books written about King Saul. In fact, every book that's written on leadership, Saul, he was the classic example of a fantastic leader. Saul, you know, you ask leaders, how do you take an organization from here to here? How do you build greatness? Saul would say, here's how you do it. I took the nation of Israel from nothing to greatness. How do you mobilize people? How do you unite people in my business, in my ministry? How do you delegate? How do you organize? How do you have a vision for the future? Saul is the perfect example of the great, great leader, and leadership books would be written about King Saul. But you know what? Saul would fall. And he would fall so hard, he would never recover, and everything he built and was given to him in regards to the kingdom would be stripped from his hands. Everything. And not just his hands, his son's hands and his grandson's hands. The kingdom would be torn out from under him. He would fall. And here's how the text summarizes Saul's fate. It says this. It says, but now, this is Samuel, who is the spiritual leader of Israel, speaking to Saul. But now, your kingdom will not endure. The Lord has sought out another man, a man after his own heart, and appointed him ruler of his people. God has chosen someone else, Saul. Someone who's after God's own heart. And whatever that means, we're going to find out. And here's why, Saul, you're rejected. Samuel says this, because you have not kept the Lord's command. You have not kept the Lord's command. See, here's the deal about Saul, and here's the deal that's true for all of us. Getting by on good looks and human strength won't get you by in real life, nor will it get you by with God. Oh, human strength and good looks will get you a start in life. You know, good looks and human strength, it might get you a girlfriend, it might get you a boyfriend, it might even get you a spouse, but it will not keep your spouse. It might get you a job. It might even get a promotion in your job, but it will not keep your job. It might get you into politics, and you might even get really high in politics, but it won't keep you in your career. Eventually, and many Hollywood stars and sports stars and ministry stars and school teachers, many people, just average Joes like you and I, have found out that this works for a season, but if there's not a base, if there's not a foundation, it will come crashing down. Eventually, it just doesn't work in real life. And nor does it work with God. Because God looks beyond the exterior. Now, we'll fall for people who are faking it. But God looks beyond. He looks at the interior. He looks at the heart. And Saul wouldn't pass on that grade, on that judgment. But there was one who would. And this is a story, and if you have your Bibles, turn to 1 Samuel chapter 16. This is a story of how does God view? What does God value? How does he look And what does he value compared to how we look and how we value? And the text says this: the Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you mourn for Saul since I've rejected him as king over Israel?" Just earlier in chapter 15, God has just told Samuel, "Go tell Saul for a second time, the kingdom is being ripped out of your hands. I've chosen someone else." Samuel has just done this. Now, we don't know how much time goes between chapter 15 and 16, but a little bit of time has taken place. And what God says is, listen, there's a time for mourning, but we're not going to mourn forever. There's still things I need to do, things I need to accomplish. And he says, how long are you going to mourn? Now, do this. Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I'm sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. And now that's important. Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king. If you want to know how God chooses, this is the story. This is God's doing. He's about to do something, and we're going to see how God thinks and how and what it is that God values. But Samuel said, how can I go? If Saul hears about it, he will kill me, right? I mean, Samuel was the spiritual leader of Israel. He had anointed King Saul as king just years earlier with oil. Now he's just told Saul, listen, the kingdom's ripped out of your hands and given to someone else. Now if Samuel all of a sudden leaves his homeland with oil, his hometown with oil, Saul's going to know something's up. And he's going to come and kill me. And so God says this, the Lord said, take a heifer with you and say, I have come to sacrifice the Lord, which was not a lie, it's a diversion. He was going to sacrifice, but it was a diversion as to what he was doing also. And then God says, invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what to do. You are to anoint for me the one I indicate. Here's the deal. God told him, I want you to go do this, but he did not tell him who would be king. God said, I want you to take the next step, but I'm not going to show you the destination yet. Would you trust me enough to obey me? And you know, this is how God often deals with us as well. He says, here's the deal. I want you to take the next step. And you say, well, what's the step after the next step? And he says, I'll show you. But would you trust me enough? Would you trust me enough to simply obey me with your next step? And so Samuel does. Samuel did what the Lord said. And when he arrived at Bethlehem, the elders of the town trembled when they met him. They asked, do you come in peace? I mean, you're the judge, you're the priest, you're the prophet. Are you coming in peace, or did someone do something wrong and we're going to get judged? Samuel had just killed Agag, king of the Amalekites. You know, are you coming in peace? This was a respected, revered man in Israel. Yes. He replied, yes, in peace. I have come to sacrifice the Lord. Now consecrate yourselves and come to the sacrifice with me. Then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. And when they arrived, the sons, the elders, when they all came together, Samuel saw Eliab and thought, surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord. The eldest son of Jesse comes in, Eliab, and something about his appearance, something about what was going on with Eliab just kind of tripped the mind of Samuel. And he said, surely this is the next king of Israel. He saw, and he made a judgment call. And what we find in the next verse is what it is he saw and why he made that judgment call. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. What was it that Samuel saw? Appearance and height. And it sounds like someone else we know in the story, doesn't it? It sounds like another king, a rejected king of Israel. Here's another man who's in the mold of Saul. He's got some good looks and he is tall. And Samuel's thinking, the last king I anointed was good looking and tall. That must be what kings have going for them. This must be what leadership is all about. And God says no. And then God lets us in on how he values and what he's looking for. And the text says this, the Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. People look at the exterior, what they can judge and see, But God looks beyond the exterior and he looks at the heart. And when he says he looks at the heart, he doesn't look at the blood vessel pumping, you know, machine that's in your chest. When he says he looks at your heart, it means he's looking at your intentions, the inner thoughts of what's going on inside of you, your values, the integrity. Who are you when nobody's watching? Who are you when you're all alone? Who are you when you're not on a stage, when you're not in church Sunday morning? Who are you? What is at the core of who you are? And you know, it's interesting, when it came to Saul, he lost the kingdom not because he lacked leadership ability, not because he didn't have the skills or the courage. Saul lost the kingdom because of a malfunction of his heart. Something wasn't right on the inside, and it brought his whole life crumbling down. It became completely unraveled. And so Eliab is rejected, the eldest of Jesse's sons. So then Samuel says, bring the next son. And they bring the next son. No, he's not the one. Bring the next one. No, he's not the one. Bring the next one. And they do this for all seven of Jesse's sons. All the sons that had come, none of them are the next king. None of them are the chosen one that God said, I'm going to pick for me a son of Jesse. And all of a sudden, I think Samuel starts to freak out a little bit. And he asked Jesse, he said, are these all the sons you have? Because I'm starting to think maybe I heard God wrong. Maybe I wasn't supposed to go to Jesse of Bethlehem. Maybe I was supposed to go to Jesse of Bethel. I'm in the wrong town. I got the wrong Jesse. And Jesse replies, there is still the youngest, but he's tending the sheep. Here's the thing. When Samuel says, Jesse, bring your sons in, we're going to choose one to be king. Not even David's father believed he could be the one. Nobody believed in David. Even his own father didn't think he had what it took to be king. Man looks at the outward appearance. God looks at something different. God looks at something different. Samuel said, send for him. We will not sit until he arrives. Well, he sent for him and had him brought in, and he was glowing with health and had a fine appearance and handsome features, which is kind of interesting. The author has just said it's not because of human appearance. It's not what's on the exterior. And yet we get to David, and what does he do? He describes David's exterior. But simply what the author is doing, he's describing what David looked like. This is not why David was chosen as king. He's already told us why David was chosen as king, because he would be a man after God's own heart. And so he sent for him. Then the Lord said, rise and anoint him, David. This is the one. And so Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. Samuel then went to Ramah, which was his hometown. And here's the deal. God called David to a great task, to a great ministry. Come and be king. But when God called David, he didn't just call him and then leave him and said, David, I hope you figure it out. Good luck. He called him to a task, and then he came on him powerfully. What God calls you to, and the ministry he calls you to, and the task he calls you to, he will always empower you for. He never calls us and says, I hope you figure it out. Here's what was David's responsibility, and it's the same responsibility you and I have been given before God. David's responsibility was this: chase the Lord. Chase the Lord. And he'll figure out the rest. He'll empower you for the rest. And God would empower him, and he would go and he would slay the giant, not because of his power, but because of the Lord's power. David's job was simply this: chase the Lord. See, when it comes to the story of Saul and David and the contrast and how we view things and how God views things, here's what really matters. It's one thing. It's just this: your heart. This is what God is so concerned about. This is what God is judging. This is what God values. What's going on inside your heart, but not just what's going on inside your heart. What integrity is there? What purity is there? Are you chasing? Who is in your heart? Who is in your heart? See, a person after God's heart is a person who's after God's heart. And I mean that all in all seriousness. A person who's after God's heart is a person who's after, who's chasing after God's heart. And the story of Saul and David really show us that the interior is always more important. It will always outweigh the exterior. The interior you will always outweigh the exterior you. And here's why. Because your interior will always affect your exterior life, but almost never will your exterior life affect your interior. Almost never. And we spend so much time on the exterior, don't we? That's what people see. That's what we judge. That's what we value. And God comes along and says, I value the interior. What's going on inside of you? What's going on inside of you? Because what's going on inside of you, what's going on in your interior life will always affect your exterior. It will affect your ministry. It will affect your parenting. It will affect your marriage. It will affect your, the way you run business, the way you treat people. But rarely does your exterior, your ability in business, your ability in leadership, your ability in ministry, rarely does it affect your interior life. And that's why the interior always trumps. It always outweighs your exterior life. You know, it's kind of like building a house. You know, we focus so much on the exterior and not on the interior. It's kind of like building a house. The interior life is really your foundation. It's what's going to hold your life together. And yet, when you build a house, if you've ever built a house, how much time did you spend considering and just looking over the foundation of your home? Probably none. You probably hired someone to make sure the foundation was good. And you spent time saying, what's the curb appeal going to look like? What kind of color siding? How are we going to paint the walls? What's the bathroom going to look like? We spend all our time on the exterior. That's what people are going to judge. But if the interior, if your foundation's bad, the house will come crumbling down every single time. And it's true of your life and mine. It's true of our lives as well. The interior is always more important. You know, it's interesting when leadership is a big buzzword in today's culture in North America, and there's all sorts of books written on great leadership, and you know what they almost always exclusively focus on? The exterior life of a leader. The exterior life of a leader. How to take an organization from here to there, how to build a great ministry, how to hire, how to you know, budget, how to build into people and delegate and build great, you know, leaders underneath you, how to build organizations, how to organize, you know, all these things. It's all built on the exterior life of the leader. Very few leadership books are written on the interior life of the leader. And do you know why? Because it's boring. It's the same as true of your interior life. It's boring. Nobody sees it. It's just you. It's who you are when you're alone. Nobody knows that. And so we spend so little time on the interior because it's simply just boring. And yet what's going on in your interior will always affect your exterior. And we've seen it time and time again from leader, after ministry pastor, after politician, after movie star fall and crumble and their life becomes unraveled. Oh, it looked good on the outside. I think there's hope for us in this story. You know, some of you right now are thinking, I don't really feel like I got much going on. I'm not really that tall or that good looking. I don't even know if I'm much of a leader. I don't know if I could do great things for God. And you're just kind of starting to think, I just don't have that much to offer in my exterior. I don't know if God could do great things through me. And you feel a little lowly. There's so much hope in this story for the lowly. Those that feel like they just don't have much to offer. Because God is a God throughout history and throughout scripture that time and time again, he chooses the lowly, he chooses the unassuming, and he does great things. It was Jacob who was chosen, not Esau. And Esau was the eldest. He was the firstborn. In that culture, eldest was everything, firstborn was everything, secondborn, nothing. It was Abel's sacrifice that was accepted before God, not Cain's, even though Cain was the firstborn. Interior life matters. It was God who chose to use Joseph, the youngest of his brothers, and one who was sold into slavery because he had a pure heart before God. He had an interior, and it was Joseph. It would be through Joseph that all his brothers would be saved. It was God who chose Moses, maybe the most unassuming leader in history, the kind of leader that didn't even want to be leader. He was a bad communicator. We would write leadership books on how Moses was not the right guy. And God chose him. And you would have said of Moses in Numbers chapter 12, verse 3, he was the most humble person who ever lived. Do you know what that's talking about? Interior. And it was God who would choose an unassuming Deborah, a woman to lead the armies of Israel, and she didn't want to. And God did great things through her. God would choose Gideon, a coward, and do great things through him. And God would choose David, a boy, someone nobody believed in, not even his dad, to be the greatest king in the history of the nation of Israel. And in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul would come along, and he would list his exterior credentials to the church in Philippi. And he would list all of his credentials and he would say, this is why I'm so worthy on the exterior. And he says, I put it all aside. I count it all as rubbish, as nothing. Why? So that I may gain Christ. What's in your heart? Maybe more important, who's in your heart? And the Apostle Paul would put everything aside to say, I want Christ. I want Jesus. I put my faith in him. As Psalmist would write, David, and this is our theme verse for this entire series, he would write this, in you, Lord, my God, I put my trust. My hope is in you all day long. I've got nothing. It's you, you, and you. I want you in my heart. I want you, God, in my interior. I put my trust in you. You know, the Apostle Paul would write this to the Corinthians, about God choosing the lowly. And he says this, brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many of you were influential. Not many of you were of noble birth. And I'm sure the Corinthians are like, come on, we're not that bad. I mean, imagine if I wrote that to you guys. Yeah, you weren't that impressive. Not all of church. You didn't have much going for you. But look what God does. But God chose the foolish things of this world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of this world to shame the strong. If you feel like you don't have a lot, there's one thing God's looking for, and all of us can do it, whether you're gifted with skills and abilities and talents or not. A person after God's heart is a person who's after God's heart. Someone who chases the Lord, and you can have all the skills and abilities. You can be the most handsome, most beautiful person in all of Kneehill County, and it can all come unraveled. Can all come unraveled. The interior is always more important than the exterior. What's in your heart and who's in your heart? Paul would say this about the gospel. He said, the cross, it's foolishness to the world. It's foolishness to those who are perishing, but it's the power of God for those who believe. Who's in your heart? Have you put your faith in Jesus for the forgiveness of your sins and what he did on the cross for you? Is God in your heart? And if you have, is he the center? Is he your interior? Who are you when nobody's watching? Maybe today's a good day to kind of say, what is my life? Because here's the deal. Who you are at 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. will always outweigh who you are at 10:30 a.m. on a Sunday morning. Who you are at 1 in the morning and who you are when you go to Vegas and nobody's with you or you go on that destination vacation and nobody's gonna know who you are there will always outweigh who you are in front of your family and your friends and those who are watching. Who are you? What is at your interior? Who is at and in your interior? A person after God's heart is a person who's after the heart of God. Are you a person who's after the heart of God? And here's the deal. You're going to have to do some inventory on the parts of your life that, like, frankly, they're just boring. What happens when nobody's watching? It will always affect what happens when people are watching, but rarely Will what you do when people are watching affect who you are when no one's watching? And do some inventory. Are you a person who's chasing after God when nobody's watching in the boring parts of your life? The psalmist David wrote this way when he said, I want to do things right. I want my interior taken care of. He said this in Psalm 119, verse 9, 10, and 11. He said, how can a young person keep their way pure? How can they make sure they're taking care of their interior? He says, here's how. By living according to your word. Lord, I trust you with all my heart. Do not let me stray from your commands. And here's how David, his strategy to not stray from the commands of God. He says, I have hidden your word in my heart so that I might not sin against you. That's the interior that nobody sees. Hours spent in the word, reading the word, studying the word, letting the word regurgitate in your mind and your heart throughout the day. Nobody knows that. As you think of your interior life, are you one who's chasing after God in the parts of your life that are boring? See, I live a pretty public life as a pastor. You come and you hear me speak and teach and communicate and watch me online. You think, maybe he's a pretty spiritual guy. I'll tell you what always outweighs what I do Sunday morning. It's who I am at 7 a.m. It's who I am at 7 p.m. with my wife, my kids. It's who I am when nobody's watching. It always outweighs, every single time, it outweighs what I do here in the message I give. What about you? Are you looking after the interior of your life? People are watching your exterior. It's pretty interesting. God's watching your interior. What does he see? Let me pray for you. Father, thank you for your word. Your word's pretty challenging and encouraging. You take the lowly, and some of us, we feel lowly. I feel lowly. God, how could you use me? We feel ill-equipped and unqualified. And you take the lowly, and you do great things because you empower us for the task you give us. Thank you. God, I pray for anyone who's here that has never put their trust in Jesus. Jesus, you are not in their heart. They've never placed their faith in you. Maybe today would be their day where the cross, which seemed like foolishness, would all of a sudden become the power of God for them as they put their faith in Jesus. And for those of us who do believe, may we be those who live lives chasing you as David did in the interior parts of our life, the part that nobody sees and nobody really cares about because it's pretty boring, but God, you care about it so much. Pray that you give us strength to walk into the things we already know we need to walk into as we chase you. Pray these things in your name, Jesus.